Hello and welcome to AFAL Podcasts, the home of objective, up-to-date and independent reporting on Turkey. Don't forget to follow our reports through social media on afalnews.com or through our mobile app. Let's get started.
Hello, welcome to AFAL Podcasts. I'm Hale Akay. Today we want to talk about recent debates in Turkey over nationalism and our guest is political scientist Umut Özkırımlı. Özkırımlı is a visiting professor at Barcelona Institute of International Studies and a visiting researcher at Barcelona Center for International Studies. He is also a professor at Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Lund University and the author of several books, including Theories of Nationalism, A Critical Introduction. Welcome, Mr. Özkırımlı. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, it's a pleasure.
In relation to Turkey's military offensive in Syria launched in October, many talk about raising nationalism in Turkey. When we look at Turkey, are we talking about an escalating nationalism or a nationalism that is becoming more visible?
Yeah, that's one of the misconceptions, actually, the most persistent misconception with regards to nationalism in general, actually, not only in Turkey. I mean, there's this talk about nationalism coming in waves, and that was the case in pretty much all the whole literature and the media was talking about a rise in nationalism in the post-89 period, precisely because of the collapse of the Soviet Union. And there was this talk about, you know, nationalism coming back, coming, it's rising. That was also actually triggered or precipitated, you know, by discussions about the so-called end of the nation state with globalization in the 1990s. So when it was realized that actually, you know, as Fukuyama said, we haven't reached the end of history, that the nation state is alive and kicking, and it's actually constituting the source of many of the world's conflicts, there was this talk of nationalism coming back. I mean, the point is, and that was something that the literature, you know, the scholars and experts on nationalism are trying to remind pundits and the media alike, that nationalism was already there, never went away. And that was the case with, you know, with the nation states of, you know, that we've seen with us in the 1990s. And it was the case with the nationalism that we've seen in the wars of the Balkan wars, etc. I mean, the same is true for Turkey. I mean, we had this discussion again, I remember, at the beginning of the 1990s when there was a swelling of the Nationalist Action Party votes, in MHP votes, and everybody was so surprised. I think it was I don't remember the date of which elections, but it was the elections where MHP got 18% of the vote, and Bülent Ecevit's, the left nationalist Bülent Ecevit's party becoming the first party. I think that was, it was the 1999 elections before the 2001 crisis. And that was, you know, that was the first time that we were talking about the rise of nationalism in Turkey. And again, at that point, what we were trying to tell people that there was no such rise, that Turkey had always been nationalist, be it, you know, the official nationalism of the state or nationalism of the Nationalist Action Party or left wing. So you have different nationalist projects, but the point is basically they're all nationalists at the end of the day. I think that one of the reasons that we had this discussion again in 2000, in the first decade after, you know, of the 21st century, is because everybody was assuming that the Islamists led by Recep Tayyip Erdogan and his friends were not nationalists. They are, you know, they have some sort of a conception of a religious ummah in their minds. And that was something that was also, you know, reinforced by Davutoğlu's discourse of neo-Ottomanism, etc. So there was this kind of conception that the Islamists were not nationalists, but they had a such much larger vision in their minds. That was, of course, not true. That was one. It was a misreading of the background of these people. Let us just remind to our listeners that basically Recep Tayyip Erdogan and his friends were members of the National Vision Movement, the Milli Görüş Movement of Necmettin Erbakan, which was not only a political Islamist, but also strongly nationalist. This was also true of other religious groups like the Gulen community. I mean, they're demarcating, their marking, distinguishing feature was basically nationalism. So it was, you know, Recep Tayyip Erdogan was by training by socializing, was a nationalist. And actually he did, you know, he was very clear about this when he became Prime Minister of Turkey in 2002 and afterwards. And the second thing that we see is that he's very clever in using this nationalism. I mean, the only thing that has changed, maybe we can say that the conception of the dominant nationalist project has changed. So the official definition of nationalism today includes much more Islam than secularism of the predecessors, you know, of the Kemalist period. But what he's doing is now, you know, is actually, you know, promoting some sort of Turkish Islamic synthesis, this idea of Turkishness tied to a very strong conception of Islam. But he's also using this as a nationalist, you know, the nationalist card very skillfully when there are, you know, crises that concern his political future. So in the couple of instances that we've seen, and actually maybe that is something that, as far as I know, you want to come back to in your other questions. But I mean, you know, it's when he was losing his boss in 2015, he went on launching a war with the PKK, and everybody else basically aligned themselves behind him. And we've seen this in the recent war. I mean, all the indications were there in place that Erdogan was not doing well, the economy was not doing good. And again, he, just like other demagogues or political authoritarians or dictators, he used the nationalist card. He put Turkey into a war, and everybody aligned themselves behind Erdogan. Mm-hmm. So when the patriot card or the nationalist card is used, it's basically everybody is becoming one against the perceived enemy. And basically, you know, we lose all chances of, I mean, this muffles the distinction of, you know, any kind of politics. It actually prevents the politicization or the discussion of all our problems in many ways. So what we see is not the rise of nationalism, but what we see is basically the political alignment of all the opposition and all civil society actors behind Erdogan. And that is the saddest part of all, because we know that despite their differences, these people will always support the government or the state when there is, you know, when we're talking about the war, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yes, my second question is pretty much related, because Turkey's secular main opposition, the Republican People's Party, the CHP, fights with Erdogan whenever the president justifies some policy, like the recent incursion into Syria or national security. This time this happened despite many hoping that the CHP and the Kurdish political movement have been getting closer after local elections this year. Where is the place of the CHP in the nationalism spectrum in Turkey?
Well, I mean, CHP is the party which has founded Turkish nationalism, basically. I mean, it's just a fact that we keep forgetting. But I mean, basically, in the 1930s, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the founder of Turkish Republic, was imposing and inculcating a certain kind of idea of nationalism against the idea of Islam at that point. We're talking about 1930s, just to remind, basically to create a new citizen, the modern Turk, so to speak. And CHP was the vehicle he used to create this idea, or to create this new Turk itself, through education, through military service, through various economic policies, including taxation, but also the establishment of, you know, basically the creation of a local national bourgeoisie, etc., etc. And CHP has always been the main supporter of this idea of Turkish nationalism. Even when they're not in power, this party has always been seen as the idea of, you know, as the main guardian of the idea of Turkishness or a secular form of Turkish nationalism. So basically, it's not actually surprising at all to see that the CHP or CHP would line up behind AKP's ideology or, you know, war policies. And the only thing that we can see there is some kind of a, we can make maybe when there is no war, like the recent case or in 2015, we could just say that there might be some sort of a competition between different visions of nationalism in Turkey. The secular one, which is represented by the CHP, and the Islamist one, which is represented by the AKP and a number of other parties. But when there is such a crisis like the recent incursion in Syria or the war against the PKK in 2015, these differences dissolve. They melt away, basically, to give way to a completely unison, monolithic understanding of nationalism. Because, you know, this is the main motto of nationalism at the end of the day. I mean, nationalism claims that there are no divisions, differences of opinion between different factions of or of different groups, religious communities, ideological groupings, factions of society. It imagines a kind of monolithic, that kind of, you know, undivided image of society. And that is actually what happens in practice. No one, this is also interesting because, you know, if you believe in a, let's say, a different understanding of national interest, you can actually question the validity of the government decision to start an incursion into Syria. Right? I mean, you can just say that this is perhaps actually, this might be against the nationalist interest. But that doesn't happen for some reason in Turkey. I mean, there is this kind of a numbing effect of nationalism on people or over politics. When it comes, it kind of cloaks over all the differences. It conceals all the differences. Everything is brushed under the carpet and you have like an unquestioned obedience and loyalty to the state's ideals. Whereas, you know, you might have imagined under times that of, you know, when we have peace at least, to be actually questioning this understanding of national interest. I mean, is it in Turkey's interest to engage in war or to embark on a military expedition to Syria against the Kurds? Or is it actually a misuse, an abuse of the concept of national identity? I mean, our national identity is based on the idea that Turkey has been, the foreign powers, the West, tried to dismember the Ottoman Empire and we ended up having a republic because we fought our national war of independence. And now we're doing the same thing to another country, our neighbor, Syria. It was a telling picture when Erdogan was meeting Putin in Sochi. For this 6 hours meeting before the incursion began, Erdogan was trying clumsily to hide the map he has brought to the meeting. I mean, basically, the two leaders, what they've done there, Newsweek reported, I think, you know, got this picture of Erdogan trying to hide the Syrian map. Basically, he sat with Putin and went over the map of Syria, dividing the country into different zones of influence. This is the infamous Sèvres treaty that was, you know, supposed to divide Turkey into different parts. And now Turkey is doing this, and we are, as citizens of the Turkish Republic, told to accept this as a requirement of our national interest. It's something that, you know, as if we were threatened by the northern Syrian Kurdish Republic, somehow Rojava, you know, this experiment, as if there was some kind of an existential threat to Syria. That is, of course, you know, pretty much rubbish, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let's also talk a bit about the interaction between what's going on in the world right now and this Turkish nationalism or this new dominant form of more Islamist nationalism that is ruling Turkey today, theoretically. So I know that you have been working on the new far right in Europe. Though Turkey today seems like a country that is essentially busy with its own problems, how is the rising far right and populism in the West interacting with the Turkish nationalism in particular and the Turkish politics in general?
I think what we can see is Turkey is mentioned in two different ways in the ongoing debates and also, well, I mean, both of the literature, we can talk about academic debates or debates in the media, but we can also talk about the actual politics of things. If you look at the first one, like, you know, the discussions about Turkey, Turkey is considered, well, as one of the examples of the global democratic backsliding, so the decline or the crisis of democracy on the one hand, And Turkey is actually cited among the new authoritarian regimes of, you know, just with, I mean, Erdogan's name is mentioned with the likes of Putin in Russia, Modi in India, Orban in Hungary, Kaczynski in Poland. So basically, Erdogan and Turkey are seen as an example of one of these rising authoritarianisms in the world. So far as the far right, as you mentioned in your question, is concerned, the second part, authoritarian leaders find, I mean, this, you know, this is the trend that we see in the, you know, in debates, public debates or media debates, academic debates about Turkey, is reflected just like a mirror, you know, it's almost a negative image of it is pretty much the, well, I mean, I should say the mirror image of it, not negative image of it, is Erdogan siding with those far-right leaders. So, I mean, we've seen that Orban actually, you know, was when Turkey, well, Erdogan visited Hungary, they were happy to show, you know, to pose for cameras together. We know that Erdogan has a very close relationship with the likes of Putin and Trump, and that is considered as a cause of concern in liberal West. I mean, Macron has made it very clear, saying that NATO right now is going through some kind of a crisis, existential crisis, actually. So I mean, you know, for the far right, Erdogan is one of them, basically. He's seen as an ally. For the literature on the far right, Erdogan is an example of far right itself. So basically, you know, what we see here in Turkey is very much in line with global trends in many ways. Turkey is seen as part of the, you know, recent wave of authoritarian regimes. It is also, you know, discussed as a case of democratic backsliding. You know, it was, you know, it's still, you know, I mean, there are still debates about whether to consider Turkey as a semi-democracy or not. That's long gone. I mean, even on Freedom Index, Freedom House Index, Turkey is now considered as not free. And the fact that we have a working, to a certain extent, more or less, you know, free elections. But we know that the elections in Turkey are not fair at all, but at least they're free. And as we have seen in the last local elections, we know that the opposition can still win elections, despite all the impediments to the democratic expression of will. So in that sense, Turkey is still on paper or, you know, officially a procedural democracy, but it's not a liberal democracy in the way in which we define the term, or it's not a substantive democracy because none of the freedoms we associate with democracies exist in Turkey. Now, in terms of the far right, as I said, Erdogan is a good ally because he's a strong man, he's authoritarian, he's a one-man ruler. That makes a huge difference for the likes of, so he's a kind of figure to look up to. Even where I live in Spain, I was seeing in the discussions about, you know, because right now, you know, Spain also has a far-right problem, a party which never existed before, Vox, has started to well, I mean, it has its first strong showing in the local elections of Andalusia in 2018, and in the last elections, they put in 52 members of parliament to the parliament, basically. And even in those discussions, Erdogan is seen as kind of the you know, the strong uncle of the Turks. Kind of, you know, it is sad that, you know, from a world where Turkey was still trying to be some sort of democratized, you know, the discussion was in the 90s or, you know, 10, 20 years ago, whether Turkey would be able to consolidate its democracy, whether it would become more democratic with EU membership. Right now, in 2019, Turkey is no longer, I mean, it's still on paper a candidate, but, you know, we know that it's not going to be a member of the European Union. We have almost on, you know, officially a presidential system, no longer a parliamentary system. The system is propped up by a very strong understanding of nationalism. And Erdogan is cited among the far-right authoritarian leaders of the world. I think, you know, we've come a long way, but basically we've come a long way on the wrong direction. That's what I would say, actually.
Okay, thanks very much, Mr. Özkırmızı. Thanks again for joining us.
No problem. Thank you very much. Okay. Have a nice week.
Thank you. And thanks everyone for listening, guys. Goodbye.